Blog Talk Radio.
An NFL Draft Bible.com exclusive.
Good morning, everybody. On this football Sunday, it is the NFL Draft Bible Draft Digest show. And this morning, we are talking offensive line and tight ends, and with me, as always, is the Reverend Ralph Mancini. Good morning, Reverend.
As we know, it always starts in the trenches.
That's right. And did you have the knee benders on one side of the congregation and the waist benders on the other side?
Absolutely.
But if you had a 35-inch or longer arm length, I think you could switch over, right, if you were a waist bender.
Well, that puts you at the top of the pinnacle right there.
And as always, also, Justin on the phone line. Good morning, Justin. How's it going there? And Big Ten country, which is always seems to produce an offensive lineman in the first round.
Yeah, we've got the, you know, those big, you know, country fed guys. So some of these guys in this year's draft, that's for sure.
Yeah, from, you know, ranges from booms to busts. You could have the first overall pick like Jake Long there from the great state of Michigan, and then you got guys like Tony Mandarich who don't quite pan out to the girth and the bulk.
That's for sure.
Yeah, we're also talking a lot of pro days today, and we have on-location reports from our own correspondents. Bo Marchant was at Ohio State on Friday. He was also at Kent State earlier in the week. While he was at Ohio State, Tyler Oberle was in Purdue. And earlier in the week, our guy Rob Brewer, Football Rob, was here in the Northeast checking out the boys at Rutgers and Fordham, the Bronx, baby, Fordham. Getting a little, yeah, they play football. Well, you know, Vince Lombardi played there once upon a time, but apparently they still do play football there. That's what they used to ask at my alma mater, St. John's, when I went there. We play football here? Well, not anymore, but Fordham still does, and they actually have an NFL prospect there who is looking to make noise. Quickly, some other pro day news this week before we move on. Mike Kafka looked pretty impressive there at Northwestern. Dominique Franks ran a 4.47, you know, rebounding a little bit from his less than stellar, let's say, combine performance. Alphonso Smith, I know Justin's a fan of his, 4.38, 40-yard dash. And we learned Rolando McClain has Crohn's disease at his pro day, something he's dealt with since his freshman year of high school. But right now we're going to our first on-location pro day report with Mr. Bo Marchant.
NFL Draft Bible on location.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, Bo, how's it going today? How's everything?
Everything's good, my man. Everything worked out with the clocks? Any mess-ups as you got going this morning?
Nah, we're looking good so far, although I have trouble with the name, you know, daylight savings time, considering we were losing an hour. I don't know what I didn't save anything this morning. I know that much.
Yeah,
all right, I'll throw it to Justin first. I know he had a question to ask you about the Ohio State Pro Day.
Yeah, as far as morning, how's it going, Bo?
Good, my man.
Good. Hey, the guy that I kind of wanted to see what your thoughts were was for Jim Cordell from the center from Ohio State. I know you talked with him and different things like that. Well, what did you think about this guy who's kind of maybe those underrated prospects, you know, a late draft pick or a priority free agent who could make a team and be, as far as a stellar offensive lineman at the next level?
Yeah, I thought he worked out well, and I know during the workouts he looked good. I know he's very versatile. I mean, that was one of the things he was most proud of. There's his time at Ohio State, his versatility to move around on the line. I know after the game or after his pro day workout, I know they went outside and he had some. I wouldn't say there were private workouts, but several teams went out to watch him do some drills, and I know he was. He stood out, I think, one, because he was one of the, only offensive linemen really doing the drills. And, while all the other kids were taking the Wunderlich test, you had a guy like Jim Cordell, 3-year starter for Ohio State, working in front of these teams. But, very strong kid. I think when he's not going to go in the gym and put those crazy numbers. I think he put up 23 bench reps on his pro day. He wanted to get around 25, 26, so he said he was disappointed with that. But, very versatile, and, he's a smart player. And, coming from Ohio State, he has the tools to get to that next level.
Hey, Bo, Ralph here. Couple of other guys that worked out there. Thaddeus Gibson was absolutely tremendous, flashing his 4.6 speed. But a small school player was also present at the workouts there, and he goes by the name of Akwasi Awasu-Ansa. Wow, that's a mouthful. What did you think about him?
You know, it was funny because I was standing outside talking with an agent, and while I was making my way back in, I saw this kid with the combine gear on. And I'm like, who's this kid? And, it was Akwasi, and, you know, and he went in and worked out, and that obviously got me excited seeing another guy, roll into Ohio State's pro day. And obviously everyone knows this kid's from Indiana University, the Indiana from Pennsylvania, not the one in Indiana. And like I said, I thought he looked great. I thought he looked real well. He brings a lot to the table. I mean, I know he played against inferior talent, against, you know, what the other schools did. But a guy like him, I mean, he's going to be hard to find because he has size, he has speed. You know, he can return. So, I mean, you're talking about a guy with very rare skills. And for him to get this type of attention to the combine and things of that nature, Ohio State inviting him down to or allowing him to work out their pro day. And also, I know I sent the NFL Draft Bible some Twitter stuff. I know the Miami Dolphins were there at Ohio State's pro day, and they talked with him at length. So that might be something to put on the back burner as a team that might be interested in taking a guy like him.
That would be interesting. And, Bo, in addition to being at the Ohio State day, you're not only a big Ten guy, you're also a Big Mac guy. You were there at Kent State where last year you discovered a man named Julian Edelman. You might actually know Julian Edelman before Bill Belichick did last year, if I'm correct here. And did you discover possibly another diamond in the rough, another impressive athlete there coming out of the Mac school?
Well, we're talking about Jameson Kont, the converted linebacker who went to H-back this season for Kent State. Now, a team that's going to take this guy is going to get a kid that tested off the charts. I mean, he ran a 4.38. He had a 46-inch vertical. I've never seen them have to reset the pole because he hit every flag. You know, I mean, it was an impressive sight to see. And the other thing about him is he just looks physically impressive. Very ripped up, a big kid. Like I said, about 6'3", 234, but, you know, looks the part. The things they're going to be cautious about, Dan, when they look at this kid is he's very raw. I mean, he had one season on the offensive side of the ball. So, I mean, he's going to be somebody that they're going to have to work with, you know. And he seemed like a bright kid. I wasn't able to pick his brain and ask him Wonderlic-type questions. But he seemed like a great kid. And, you know, the team that invests in him, like I said, is going to have to, they're not going to get instant production out of a guy like that. That said, you know, he had 28 catches, I think, 21 catches, 298 yards, I believe, fifth in total offense for a Kent State team that battled injuries throughout the season. I know they were down to basically their third-string quarterback by the end of the season at the Buffalo game. So Jeremy Kont is a nice little sleeper. I think I was a little bit more keen on Julian Edelman last year, Dan, so I don't want to take too much credit for Kont. But, he's definitely a kid that, you know, when you go to Kent State's pro day and you're kind of sitting there and things are kind of quiet and all of a sudden, you know, there's a young gentleman who starts putting numbers up there. They're going to top anybody at the Indianapolis Combine. It definitely made for news.
Bo hedging his bets a little bit there on Mr. Kont, but definitely somebody to keep an eye on, diamond in the rough, potentially down the road, a little bit of a developmental guy. But I think, you know, the intriguing athleticism is there, so somebody's going to give him a chance. Bo, thanks a lot for the reports, and we hope to see more from you as the pro days continue.
Yeah, Dan, and real quick, I just want to let you guys know Ashland's quarterback, Billy Cundiff, was there, and I know his associate head coach, Doug Geiser, was there as well. And I know Coach Geiser spoke at length with the Green Bay Packers. I just wanted to give you guys that little tidbit. And the Jaguars seemed interested in Kirk Coleman from Ohio State. They spoke a lot while they were down there. Just, afterwards, there were a few people who just spoke, I'd say, for about 15 to 20 minutes. And I would assume they weren't talking about where to get a steak. I assume they were talking about the X's and O's of football. So, hey, guys, I just wanted to pass that on, and, I'll have a great show.
Great job, as always, Bo. We love having Bo on. That's Bo Marchand, our correspondent. You can read his stuff on Location Reports on the website, as well as all those awesome player spotlights that he does. It seems like, you know, he does about 10 a day. This guy is talking to more players than anybody else in the country, and we are moving along, going over, staying in the Big Ten country, talking a little Purdue with another
NFL Draft Bible on location.
Hey, Dan, how are you doing?
Pretty good. How's it going? That's Tyler Oberle, who is at Purdue. How's everything, Tyler?
Doing really good. Yeah, the pro day over in – oh, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, Tyler. This is Ralph. How's it going?
I'm doing good, Ralph.
I wanted to ask you, you were recently at Purdue, and one player in particular who was working out after an impressive combine where he registered 33 reps in the weight room, ran a 4.85, defensive tackle Mike Neal, stood by his numbers on Friday. Did the team reps that were there, did they ask him to do any specific agility drills?
They did. They didn't ask him to do any specific agility drills, the broad jump, even the three cone, none of those. The only things that he actually did was the defensive tackle drills that assistant coach Brian Cox of the Cleveland Browns came in, and he was the one that was heavily talking to Mike throughout the entire pro day, but he had Mike go through a few different defensive tackle drills. That was really all he did. I talked to Mike a little bit afterwards. He said he was really happy with his, the combine in Indy with the 33 reps and the 4.86 40. He said he was pretty happy with that. So,
hey, Tyler, I know Brian Cox jumped into your time a little bit there, but you did get a chance to speak to Mike. What did he have to say? Anything interesting after the pro day performance?
Yeah, I was a little, I asked him just about the pressure. What's it like, leading up to the draft right now? And him, as well as a couple other players I talked to, they all just seem, anticipating and very excited about the draft. More or less, let's get through this process. Let's get through this next month, and then let's find out where I'm going so I can start practicing. I think that was the biggest thing for Mike. I wouldn't say he's tired of this process, but I think he's more ready to just find out where he's going more than anything else. He's just really anticipating where to play, and he just wants to get in the weight room and start working out with his new team. So,
speaking about another guy there at as far as Purdue's pro day, what about as far as the cornerback, a guy who I kind of like as far as maybe a fifth, sixth type rounder? That's David Pender there from Purdue. What was your thoughts as far as his work out there at Purdue's pro day?
Pender is very smooth athletically. I mean, coming in and out of cuts, I was pretty surprised. Obviously, in comparing him to some of the other cornerbacks that were there with Purdue, Pender is obviously the top coming out of there. He stuck with his 4.47 40 from Indy. He didn't run that. I was particularly unimpressed by his bench. He's not necessarily a big guy. He's only 6 foot, 178 is what he weighed in at. His bench press was only 12 reps. But in terms of speed, coming in and out of cuts, he definitely has the quickness to be a type of a cover corner professionally. He's not going to be a corner that's going to come in and make the big hit on you, but he's definitely a guy that can stick with you, jump the route, and make the play. So I think it'll be pretty interesting to see, come draft day what'll happen. But I agree with you, 5th, 6th round, somewhere around there seems to be a good fit for him.
Hey, Tyler, before we let you go, I know you also mentioned the quarterback there, Joey Elliott, looked pretty decent out there. I know he's not as ballyhooed and as previous Purdue quarterbacks and most likely isn't expected to get drafted, but there was some interest in him there. You mentioned at the pro day, and he's somebody that will get a look at a camp, I think.
Yeah, I do definitely see him, potentially being a free agent. If he would be drafted, it would be a very late round, but had some very good throws. The receiver Aaron Valentin was the one also that he was working with. But I did notice Miami scout that was there asked Joey to do a couple of extra, 6-cone shuttle, some of those things, because he wanted to see his foot speed and his agility. So Miami was keeping a pretty close watch on him, even when he was doing his passing. I particularly saw the Miami scout among all the other scouts watching Joey the most. And then someone else who just kind of caught my eye, never really paid much attention to him, But Dwight McLean, safety, great size. This kid is a workhorse. He's 6'1", 210. He had 27 reps in the bench. He's not necessarily fast, only a 4.7 40, but he did have a 33-inch vertical. The kid is huge. I mean, for a safety, he could be a guy that would lay the wood to you. Definitely a great special teams player. I don't see him necessarily getting drafted, but, again, another guy that might get some workouts, you know, in the free agency. So,
Tyler, thanks again for joining us and giving us that information from the Pro Day Report. That's our NFL Draft Bible correspondent, Tyler Oberle.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, folks, and as we wait for Mr. Robert Brewer, Football Rob, calling in, who is at Rutgers and Fordham, I want to let you know, go to that NFLDraftBible.com website right now, punch in VIP 2010, and you could get the bargain of the year. You could get the all-access football membership for half off. That's $20 for the book, for the PDF, our 2010 draft recap, 2011 draft preview, college football insiders newsletters for $20 for being our loyal listener here on Draft Digest Weekly. That's VIP 2010, $20 for a $40 package. Hey, the book is $25 in its own. I got to talk to Rick about this deal. I think we're giving away too much here, but jump on it now while it lasts. VIP 2010, $20 for the entire all-access football membership. So it's like getting $5 off on the book and everything else for free, the rest of the shebang for free. All right? With us now is Mr. Robert Brewer, also.
NFL Draft Bible on location.
Hey,
Rob,
how's
it going today?
I'm here.
I know we're going to start off with Justin, with Rob. I know there's a player that Justin's a fan of that he wanted to ask you about.
Hey, Rob, Justin, how's it going, man?
Going good, Justin, going good.
That's good. Hey, a guy who's really, you know, kind of through this whole process has really kind of moved his way up and possibly into that late first round, that's cornerback Devin McCourty. I mean, he's a very physical guy, got good size, is instinctive, got, you know, pretty good speed. What was your thoughts there, his pro day coming off his combine that he had there in Indy?
Well, he didn't want to run the 40. He decided to stand on what he did at the combine, but he did do all the positional drills, and man, he looked amazing. I mean, you don't even, like I say, you know, you really can't identify these players sometimes because they work out without their shirts on, and you know they want to show what they've got for the scouts. But you know, even if you can't identify who he is, or if you don't recognize his face, you could just tell by the drills that how smooth and just flawless he is. He could pretty much write a book on these positional drills. He looked phenomenal on his pro day. And the other thing about him, he's such a well-spoken kid. You know, after the workout, you know, he really impressed me in a day and age where, you know, some idiot quarterback is getting accused of sexual harassment, and you got another defensive back who will remain nameless who needs a $500,000 advance because he's got some child support issues there. In a day and age where a lot of pro athletes have issues like this going on, it's really refreshing to hear Devin McCourty and how well-spoken he is. And he's got first-round pick written all over him, guys.
Hey, Football Rob, Ralph here. The other guy I wanted to ask you about was the big guy, Anthony Davis. He's beginning to look more and more like this year's version of Andre Smith. Reports say that Davis showed up but was sent home. Could you tell us the complete story on that?
Well, I heard that he didn't even show up. So, you know, the buzz around the Rutgers Pro Day was that he had a stomach virus, and that's why he couldn't work out. But a lot of people in the know, word on the street is that he probably wasn't in great shape, and that's kind of the reason why he didn't want to show his face there, because I was there 20 minutes early and I didn't see him. So, you know, a lot of things are not looking good for him, because it looks as though he's got the talent, obviously, and you've got a lot of great film on him, but does he really want it that badly? Does he want to be the best tackle in the draft? And right now, I'd have to say no.
Speaking of the word of the street, Rob, you were in the Boogie Down Bronx earlier in the week to see a certain quarterback there, Mr. Skelton. I mean, the last time a football player made this much noise in the Bronx was Drew Henson. Wait a second. He never made it to the Bronx, did he? No, okay. Scratch that. Rob, what did the big fella look like there out of Fordham?
Also, you got to remember Vince Lombardi went to Fordham. I think that's the last time a Fordham player made some noise football-wise. But looking at Skelton, I mean, he had the zip on his throws. He looked comfortable moving around in the pocket. And that's why I kind of chuckle when everybody compares him to the next Joe Flacco, because Joe Flacco looks like he has two left feet, and he looks kind of goofy back there at times. And I didn't see that out of Skelton. He looks like a fluid athlete. But the one, and also, you know, he interviewed pretty well. He sounds like a quarterback. If you didn't even know what position he plays and you just spoke to him, you could tell that this guy's a quarterback. He's got a good head on his shoulders, and he seems pretty cool back there fielding different questions from me. So, but the one thing that I didn't like is his accuracy issues. You know, he missed a lot of deep balls, some medium, mid-range routes, and that's something he's got to work on. And I know that Fordham had a lot of different players from different schools try out at their pro day, but at the same time, you got to make some throws. And, you know, he missed on some throws that you'd expect an NFL prospect to make. So that was kind of disappointing. Overall, I think I'd give him a C-plus for the day if I were giving him a letter grade.
All right, Rob, thanks a lot for the information there from Rutgers as well as Fordham. That was Football Rob, our draft correspondent. He's also a NFL Draft Bible Player Spotlight host, so check out his interviews there. Rob, thanks a lot again.
You got it, guys.
And Football Rob taking a little low blow to Ralph's guy, quarterback Joe Flacco there, Ralph.
I think he forgot to mention that one thing that Flacco does know how to do is read defenses, which Mr. Skelton has yet to prove.
I had to give you an opportunity, Ralph, to jump in there. I held back my laughter when I heard the little shot there. Just to throw out there, offensive coordinator Marty Mornenweg from the Eagles was there at Fordham, as well as their quarterback coach, James Urban, Bengals quarterback coach Ken Zampezi, among others there to check out Mr. John Skelton. And moving right along, we have our special guest coming on board now, and that is Mr. Will Spencer from DraftBreakdown.com. Good morning, Will, and thank you for joining us today.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, Will, you know, thanks a lot for joining us. You've been doing a great job with that InterMock draft, which is almost complete, which, you know, involves not only Draft Breakdown and NFL Draft Bible, but several other of the top NFL draft websites around the country. We're going to start talking a little bit about sleepers with you, and Justin, I'll throw it to you first.
Yeah, Will, this Justin, I wanted to see kind of what was your thoughts on some of these tight end sleepers? I know we've got this is a pretty deep class of tight ends. A lot of them showed well at the NFL Combine, and now we've seen getting some in the pro days. But who is really kind of your sleepers in that tight end class later in the draft and into priority free agency?
Well, it really depends on what you're looking for. There are a couple of guys that are strictly just stretch the field tight ends, and they're not going to give you a whole lot in the blocking game. And then there are a few guys that are really just good, you know, practically a third offensive tackle on the field. One of the guys who I really like for their blocking ability is Alabama's Colin Peake. He wasn't asked to be much of a receiving tight end for the Crimson Tide, but did a great job in the blocking game. And it obviously showed with the amount of rushing yards Alabama was able to put up all season. He's a pretty natural pass catcher when he gets the opportunity. They just didn't ask him to do it too much. His strength is a little bit of a concern to me. He only put up 19 reps on the bench. I would have liked to see a little bit more from him. But overall, if you're looking for a guy that you can plug on the end of the line and help your run game out, he's someone you could look for in the later rounds of the draft to do that. If you're looking for tight ends that really get to stretch the field, one guy I like is Andrew Corliss out of Penn State, 6'4 and 3/4, 255. Great size for a tight end. Ran his 40 at the combine at 4.69, so he obviously has the speed. Pretty smooth pass catcher. Pretty nice route runner. The problem with him is he's not going to provide you a whole lot in the blocking game. Falls off his blocks an awful lot. and looks physically overmatched against some strong outside backers.
Yeah, hi, Will. This is Ralph here. There are a lot of good sleepers out there on the offensive line as well. You know, one guy that showed some potential is a small school kid, Jared Veld here out of Hillsdale College, tall kid with some flexibility. Who are some of the guys that have caught your eye at this point?
Well, one of the guys I like to think about is someone I just saw at the Rutgers Pro Day, and I was actually just there with Football Rob the other day, Kevin Haslam. He was a starting right tackle opposite Anthony Davis. And the thing about Haslam is he's got experience at several offensive line positions. He filled in for Davis when he was injured at the left tackle spot, and before being the permanent starter at right tackle, was moved around between left guard and right guard. So scouts were paying pretty close attention to him at the pro day. During the position drills, he moved well. He gets a little bit high, doesn't always bend at the knees like you'd like, but he's a guy that you can bring in the later rounds. You know, if he slips, maybe he's an undrafted free agent that will provide, you know, some serious quality depth, you know, for any NFL team.
Hey, Will, it's Dan again, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about your website. Tell the listeners out there what they can find when they check out draftbreakdown.com.
Well, the thing that we pride ourselves in is our in-depth scouting reports. You know, we try not just to give the pros and cons. We give, you know, information about how much playing experience the guys had. We actually have a professional scoring system developed from NFL scouts. You know, there are non-position-specific categories that we grade each player in, as well as position-specific categories. So we'll go through and we'll grade them with that. We'll give you some of their weaknesses, some of their strengths. You know, we'll go through and we'll give you the awards that they've won and you know, just some of their overall playing experience. But the best thing about it is if you don't like what we're saying, there's a comments field. If you think we missed something in our scouting reports, and this actually goes for any article on the mock drafts or any post that's on the website, the reader can post their comments. If we miss something, if you think that, you know, if you think Colin Peake's not as good of a blocker as we think, you know, put it on there. We want to hear from you. It's really the readers that drive the site, you know, and we're trying to promote that even more. And the drafts become more and more popular every year, and it's because people have such a huge interest in it. So we want to hear the reader's opinion. We're on Facebook. You can see us at Draft Breakdown on Facebook. Become a fan. I always post the updates through Facebook, you know, whenever we have something. And, of course, on Twitter, at Draft Breakdown. I'm constantly on there doing updates, and we've actually, you know, developed a lot of followers that way and a lot of attention to the site. So it goes pretty well. We like I said, we just went to the Rutgers Pro Day. Next week we have plans to go to another Pro Day. I haven't decided if I'm going to West Virginia or Virginia Tech yet. I'm out of Baltimore, so I try to get something that's relatively close. But, you know, we'll have that coming up. And we've had some in-depth reports. We went to the Senior Bowl again this year. It's the second year in a row we went down there. There's some, you know, good photographs and in-depth, you know, coverage. We do player interviews. As a matter of fact, later this evening, I've got an interview lined up with Missouri linebacker Sean Weatherspoon, so I'll have that up over the next day or two. So we provide, you know, try to provide well-rounded coverage and information for you know, fellow draft followers.
And Will, before we let you go, in addition to that kind of old-school scouting that you're trying to bring there to the website, talk a little bit about the new technology, the other end of the spectrum, and this iApp plugin.
Oh, it's great. Last year we got with the guys from TapTapas. You know, they develop iPhone applications, and they developed a mock draft app. And this year we're going full force into it, and you know, bringing you some in-depth stuff. And what you'll be able to do is, if you have an iPhone, you can create your own mock drafts. It'll connect directly to our player rankings inventory. You'll be able to see our scouting reports. And conduct your own, and it'll go through and say you only want to pick for one team. You know, if you're a Jets fan or a Giants fan, if you only want to pick for them, it'll make the other picks for you based off our rankings. But not just the rankings, it'll also base it off of areas of need for those teams. So you're not getting teams picking a quarterback just because they're the highest ranked player on the board. It's a nice companion to have during the draft. You know, especially if you're just a a casual fan, if your team selects somebody, you can instantly find more information about them. Just plug their name into the application, and there you go. Last year, it was the first year in development for it, and it actually, it was in the, I believe, the top three, if not maybe the top overall sports application during the draft time. And this year, we're promoting it even more. There's going to be even more features. You can check the guys out at taptapas.com, TAPAS.com. They've got some of the stuff from last year's mock draft app on there, but they'll have some of the new stuff up coming soon.
Great. Thanks a lot. Great information from Will Spencer from draftbreakdown.com. Will, thanks a lot for joining us this morning.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right. That was Will Spence from draftbreakdown.com. Good stuff there with the iApp going on. And don't forget to go to NFLDraftBible.com for not only your pro day news, but great interviews, NFL news, like the Browns scooping up Jake Delhomme recently. We have a look back at the late legendary great Merlin Olsen, Pro Football Hall of Famer. Some of you might know him from Little House on the Prairie. Some of the player spotlight interviews there are Jim Cordell, who we talked about earlier, and Jameson Kantz from the Pro Days, as well as Derek Hardman, a potential sleeper at offensive line from Eastern Kentucky, and Darryl Washington, one of the high-rising linebackers out of TCU, as well as a Q&A with defensive tackle Jeff Owens out of the University of Georgia, one of the strongest men in this draft. Some other news to touch upon, we have people who have not worked out at their pro day. Guys like LeGarrette Blount will be working out this week on March 18th. Sam Bradford did not go to the Oklahoma pro day. He let everybody know in advance he wanted to keep working out and training. He will be working out on March 29th. Dez Bryant also did not perform at his pro day. He will be performing on March 25th. We are told by his people they're not sure exactly where. It will not be at Oklahoma State, most likely in the state of Texas, his home state. We should, you know, keep out for details from that. We should be finding that out sometime this week, where exactly he's going to be working out. And also Parrish Cox, who was banned from the Oklahoma State pro day. Not good stuff when your school asks you not to work out there. He's going to be working out on his own on March 30th. All right, guys, I know I got two guys here in Ralph and Justin who are just chomping at the bit to get some words in here, so I'm going to release the hounds as we move on to our next segment. We're going to talk about the tight end position before we get into the offensive line, and there's definitely a couple of tight ends there at the top of the draft who people want to hear about, so we're going to start there. That is the familiar OU fight song, so we all know where we're starting, and that's tight end Jermaine Grisham from the Oklahoma Sooners. Ralph, let's start with you. Where does he go? What type of impact can he have as a rookie in the NFL? This is somebody who could have been potentially the top tight end last year had he left as a true junior, then had that preseason injury, missed the entire year. Well, what's the impact there?
Well, I think that he can go in the late first round. I could specifically see him going to the Baltimore Ravens at the 25th slot of the first round. You know, they've already acquired two wide receivers, Anquan Boldin and Dante Stallworth. So maybe right now it would make sense for them to find Todd Heap's eventual successor in Jermaine Gresham. And as far as, you know, what type of impact this guy could make in his first year and down the road, I think this guy can make an instant impact. You know, he's got that long, lean frame. He's got the long arms. He might not have outworldly straight-line speed, but he quickly gets in his routes. He's extremely fluid. He's got great hands. He has the range to make tough catches outside his frame. And the underrated part about Jermaine Gresham is he's very strong. He's stronger than he looks, and he's strong enough to make plays across the middle, but yet he could also beat man coverage on deeper routes. So he is a big play guy, and I think he definitely will make an impact early in his NFL career.
Yeah, still very raw as a blocker, though. Justin, what's your take?
Well, you know, I don't think he's going to be there for Baltimore. I think he goes 21 to the Bengals there, Rev. I think the biggest thing is when we saw him at the combine, and as far as he didn't run the great 40 time, wasn't the Vernon Davis type speed and just type wow factor. But to me, he's a more complete type of football player, and I really like him in the red zone. I mean, as a junior, had 14 touchdowns, and then we go back to his sophomore season, had 11 touchdowns. So this is a guy who finds the end zone. He's a big body guy. I think he's got a chance to get a little bigger and stronger, and I think he catches the football well. So, I mean, this is a guy, to me, who could be, and we saw as far as Brandon Pettigrew go 20 to the Detroit Lions, and that's where I kind of see Gresham going probably 21 to the Cincinnati Bengals because they need some playmakers on offense as well.
So I think, guys, this is somebody who was hurt a little bit by missing the year, not necessarily putting up the combine numbers we thought he was going to put up, because I think he's a guy that could have been inside the top 20, maybe inside the top 15, but not that much. He's going to stay in the first round, and he's still the clear-cut number one tight end, I think. Let's see. You know, we got one more guy to talk about as a potential first-round pick, Mr. Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, well,
Ralph, I know you're a big Gronkowski fan, as am I. Is he a first-round pick? One, do you think he should go in the first round? Two, do you think he will go in the first round?
I think he should definitely go in the first round, and I could see him definitely going to a team maybe like Baltimore, Arizona, New Orleans, or maybe even the Rams could take him with their first pick in the second round. I think he will go somewhere late in the first round, and if he doesn't, I think the Rams will take him with their first pick in the second round. As far as him making an impact, you know, I think when I look at this guy, I see the next Mark Bavaro potentially here. He's got those long arms. He's got tremendous size at about 6'6". He's about 250, 260. And, you know, the thing about him is he's strong enough to block defensive ends. He's got that type of size and strength. But he also has strength to beat the jam at the line of scrimmage. He makes tough catches in traffic. And the most exciting part about his game is once he catches the ball, this guy is very hard to break down, and to tackle. So, you know, this guy, he is very fun to watch. You know, if they ever build a tight end in a football factory, he would probably end up looking like Rob Gronkowski. This kid is the prototype.
Justin, how about you? What's your take on Gronko out of Arizona? Like Gresham, did not play all last season, and unlike Gresham, he didn't perform at the combine, so we're still waiting to see what he's going to do when he works out individually. What do you think? Do you think he sneaks into the first round and makes it two tight ends in round number one?
I think there's possibility, but he's going to have an all-world type workout at his pro day and just really, you know, show some things that, you know, just kind of pop the eye, you know, eyes of this NFL scouts. And because I think the biggest thing is because we haven't seen a ton of him. He's not like Boris Gresham, who's, you know, we were very excited, you know, for him. You know, he had an okay, 2008 season, you know, had 10 touchdown passes and he caught 42 passes, but not the type of, you know, season we saw Gresham in 2008. So I think him not playing last year hurt him more than it hurt Jermaine Gresham. So I think he could sneak in maybe to, like, as far as to Baltimore, like, you know, Rev saying, but I don't think he should. I think he's probably going to be a guy that's going to be more of in that mid-second round, but still a very good tight end, a guy who could start, you know, at the next level and start as a rookie. You know, I think he's just got his back got to be healthy, and hopefully he has a great workout and, you know, is able to pop in that first round. But to me, he's a guy who's a little bit more of a project, a little bit more of a risk than, Jermaine Gresham.
Yeah, I'm going to play a little wait and see myself as well in terms of what he does in his private workout. I'm hedging a little bit here. I wouldn't have a problem as a team taking him late in the first round, but I think he's more likely to go somewhere in that second round range. All right, let's move over to the offensive tackle position where, hey, there's a plethora of guys who could go in the first round. We're going to far exceed two here, and let's go there. Justin, let's start with you this time. How many guys will go in the first round? I think there's about four or five locks. How high could that number go?
I think it's definitely going to go six. Is that, you know, as far as I think, you know, Charles Brown from USC is going to get drafted in the first round, probably late, but then, you know, so I think there's going to be six guys in this year's class that gets drafted in the first round as far as the offensive tackle position.
Rev, your take? I mean, do you think it's six? Is Campbell a surefire first rounder as well as Charles Brown? I mean, I think, you know, Okong, Davis, Bulaga, and Trent Williams, these guys could be top 10 picks. Never mind first-round picks. How about Brown and Campbell?
Yeah, I think there are going to be six offensive tackles that are going to be taken in this first round. That's what I said a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sticking to it. You know, in a couple of other drafts, you're even seeing mock drafts, I should say, Vladimir Dukas going late in the first round. I don't see that happening because, to me, he's more of a right tackle, if anything, and he's still very raw. So I'm going to stick with Okong, Bulaga, Davis, Charles Brown, Trent Williams, and Bruce Campbell in that first round.
Well, let me twist it up a little bit for you here then, Rev. What if I said the over-under is six? You got to go over, you got to go under. Is it more likely, or would we be more likely to see five or seven go in the first round?
I'll say more likely seven, just because NFL teams just covet those tackles, especially left tackles. But even right tackles, if you're a right tackle who's a very physical type of player, you know, a guy like Jeffrey Otah who went in the first round a couple of years ago, you know, NFL teams look for those types of players too.
Yeah, we saw, you know, somebody like Sam Baker, who people thought was going to slip out of the first round 2 years ago when Atlanta took him, and they took him, I believe it was in the high 20s. So he went a lot earlier than a lot of people thought he was going to take. How about you, Justin? If I threw that over-under and said, hey, you can't land on six, buddy. You got to either go under or over. Which way are you going?
You know, just to go on the different direction, I'm going to go five. Because, you know, maybe, you know, depending on how everything plays out, maybe a guy like Bruce Campbell, you know, kicks down a little bit instead of going up in that, you know, top 15. Maybe he drops, and maybe that's, you know, as far as pushes, you know, Charles Brown out of, you know, out of the first round there. But so I think it's going to be six, but I think, it, you know, if we had to go over and under, I'd go five.
Rev, let me ask you, you threw up one name in Vladimir Dukas. If there is a seventh, do you think he's the most likely guy? And Justin, I'll let you jump in after. If you think who could potentially be in that mix to be that seventh tackle in round number one?
Yeah, I think it probably is Vladimir Dukas if I were to choose somebody to be that number seven guy. You know, just because, yeah, he is a little raw, but this guy is just a physical phenom. He's got the thick arms, the thick torso. He's got it all. He's got height. He's got decent footwork, although he doesn't always use his feet properly. But I think in terms of physical skills and athleticism, I think this is a guy you could really work with. And I think down the road he could become a very top-notch right tackle.
Yeah, to me, that's the only other guy you could really see, you know, being, you know, legitimately saying, hey, he's a first-round guy. I mean, I think if he does go in the first round, that's kind of a reach because I think he's more of a second-round type guy. And then you've got a guy like Jared Veldheers. You know, he's a guy to me who's probably a second-round, you know, second, third-round guy, but he's a guy who to me is really rising up that draft board. A lot of teams really like him, down at the Texas First Nation game, had liked him, you know, going through the NFL Combine, and now we'll see as far as this next week at his NFL Pro Day.
Yeah, interesting stuff there, guys. Before we move to the inside, I touched upon potential four guys who could go into the top 10. Let's tweak the question and say how many guys could go in the top 10, Justin. Do you think we could see four guys from the offensive tackle position go among the top 10 players?
Oh, I think definitely. I think, and then say if the Raiders jump in and take Bruce Campbell, like, you know, they possibly could. I mean, you could see five guys maybe, possibly. I mean, I think that core is, I mean, those four guys are solid, top-notch players. So I think that's where the upper echelon. And then once you get past those four, and then if you like, what do you like, Charles Brown, you like Bruce Campbell, then after that, to me, it just kind of really drops off. So you got to get one of those six, and then you're going to kind of wait, in my opinion.
I'm going to say that I see two guys definitely going in the top 10, and that's Russell Okung and Brian Bulaga.
How about Mr. Anthony? Excuse me, Mr. Anthony Davis from Rutgers. Are you implying he maybe hurt himself a little bit?
He definitely hurt himself. I actually, about a week or two ago, I had him going at number 9 to the Buffalo Bills, but after that stunt that he pulled in his pro day, you know, and showing up out of shape at the combine a couple of weeks ago, I mean, his stock has definitely plummeted. He's still going to be a first-round pick. I just don't see him being a top-10 pick. Hey, logically, why would you want to give this guy top-10 money when he's already proven to be a lazy guy, doesn't like to work out, doesn't like to lift the weights? You give him big money, is he going to be motivated to continue developing as an NFL player? You don't know that, and I'm not going to risk that. I'm not going to risk definitely a top-10 pick on this type of player.
All right, well, the funny thing is, you know, we hear the comparisons a lot to Andre Smith, and hey, Andre Smith went sixth overall, so, you know,
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see what happens come draft day, when it rolls around. Interior lineman, guys, you know, who is the top, you know, interior lineman, the premier lineman? We're talking guard, center here, and do you think, you know, this person, whoever you may pick here, could go in the first round? Because we usually don't see that many centers, guards going in round number one. Justin, I'll throw it to you. Who is the premier interior lineman in this 2010 NFL draft?
I think it's clear-cut Mikey Potty there from Idaho. I think he's clearly cut as far as the most, you know, ready guy as far as an interior lineman who could come in there, and he's going to be a first-round pick and start immediately. You know, he's a guy who could kick out to right tackle, you know, as far as so. And then, you know, I think there's a couple other guys that could, you know, get drafted in the first round as far as there's Marquise Pouncey from Florida, and then Rogers, you know, Stanfold from Indiana. So I think this year's class, I mean, I think there could be a number, there could be, you know, 9 offensive linemen that get drafted in the first round, because I think that's the evolution of, hey, let's take a safe pick because we don't want these busts that we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I don't think it's only the safe pick. I think it's the money these guys get paid in free agency nowadays. I mean, you know, used to be able to get linemen on the cheap. Then it became left tackles got premier money. Now it's guard centers get big-time money in free agency. So, you know, we see what these guys get out there. I think that makes a premium on draft weekend when you can get a guy at a more reasonable price and potentially even more reasonably moving down the road. Rev, is Mr. Upati out of Idaho, the mid-major kid, is he your number one interior guy as well?
Yes, he is, but since Justin already talked about him, I'm going to focus on Marquise Pouncey, who I think is that next guy at the interior position. You know, Pouncey, to me, he's a smart and intense competitor. He can drive block in the running game, but also has the ability to pick up defenders and pass protection. He's athletic enough to get to the second level and clear out those linebackers. Plus, he's already shown that he's versatile enough to play both the guard and center positions. So here's a guy that quite possibly sneak into that first round at the end of the first round. You know, maybe the Colts might take him, you know, as a eventual replacement for Jeff Saturday, who's getting a little long in the tooth.
Well, let me ask you guys this. You know, last year we didn't have a guard taken until the 51st overall pick, and that was Andy Levitre out of Oregon State. And in the last 5 years, we've only seen one guard go in the top 20. That was Brandon Albert, and a lot of people thought maybe he could play tackle. Justin, what is it about Upati that makes him such a clear-cut guy? And I've seen a lot of people have him go in that top 20.
Well, because he's got great size. I mean, for his long arms, very good upper body strength. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's, you know, real, real physical, you know, kind of a nasty, you know, guy. To me, he's like a Hutchinson from, you know, the Vikings, you know, a guy who can move but also nasty inside and really can help your running game. And if you get pinched, I think he can pull out there to right tackle. I don't think it's a left tackle like some people think he can come out there, but I think he can go out there and be a right tackle if you need him. But to me, he's a great fit for as a left guard. He's going to really, you know, be a great run blocker. You know, some pass blocking ability, and the only thing he's going to work on is he likes to grab a little bit too much. He can be called for holding penalties, but I mean, just for as a physical guy, a nasty guy, that's what you want as far as that interior lineman, kind of that solid core of that offensive line.
Hey, Justin, I agree with you that Upati is that type of guy, that physical presence that you like, and the thing that I like about him the most is you rarely see him on the ground. However, because he has those 35-inch arms, you know, teams might be tempted to kick him out to the outside and make him play tackle. I think that's going to be a mistake. I think you should keep him at guard where he could just flat-out dominate instead of moving him out to tackle where he's going to be an ordinary player. We've seen him during Senior Bowl practices when they kicked him out in space. He just wasn't the same player. So you need to keep this guy on the inside at the guard position.
All right, and Rev, you know, Justin did bring up Pouncey as a potential first rounder. You talked about Pouncey. In the last 10 drafts, we've only seen four centers go in round one: Jeff Fain, Chris Spencer, Nick Mangold, and Alex Mack. How does Pouncey compare in terms of value coming in as a rookie to those guys?
I think it compares favorably because, as I said before, this guy is a guy who's versatile. Not only is he strong, but he's athletic. You know, this is a guy that, you know, you could bring in. And he's a smart guy, by the way. He played with Florida. He played in a lot of big games. He's coming from that type of program. So I think if you bring him in, you know, if this guy stays healthy, he could be your starting center for the next 10 to 12 years.
All right, guys.
Yeah,
I
think the biggest thing is if you put on the tape as far as Alabama and against Tennessee, he went against Cody and played well. He went against Dan Williams of Tennessee and played well. And those guys are going to be first-round picks. So, to me, Marcus Pouncey is a first-round pick as well, just because of his ability and be a center point of that offensive line.
Yeah, and he's a very well-developed and a technician for such a young kid. Not only is he a true junior, if I remember correctly, I think he's only 20 years old. So, you know, he's going to be maybe 21 as a rookie. So he's really young, but he's really ahead of the curve. And you really, on the offensive line, when you talk about the cerebral part of the game, it's most important at the center position. And he's also a guy that could probably provide depth at the guard spots as well, which is valuable in terms of rookie and what kind of value they bring in. Folks, remember to go to NFLDraftBible.com. Go right now, click buy now, and enter code VIP2010 for the best deal on the web. That's 50% off on the all-access football package. Don't forget, check out all the great stuff on the website. And just want to throw out there some other news this week that came out was the Wonderlic scores on some of the quarterbacks. Happens every year, you know, whether it's good or bad, we hear about it. Sam Bradford, among the big-name quarterbacks, had by far the highest score, 36. The max is 50, in case you were wondering. Tebow had a 22, which was below average for an NFL quarterback. Clawson was a tick above at 23. Colt McCoy at 25. Before we move on to the three and out, Rev, do you let these numbers go in one ear and out the other, or do you put anything into this at all? I mean, I guess there's a reason the NFL has these guys take it, right? I mean,
well, you know, normally I just don't put a lot of weight in these scores, but, you know, for a quarterback, I would like to have him at least, I would like for him to at least score a 20 in that type of Wonderlic test. Look, when Vince Young scored a 6 a few years ago, that raised some red flags, but then you heard that he wasn't even trying, so. Look, I want my quarterback to score at least somewhere in the 20 range.
What was he? Was he drawing something with the bubbles? Was he making a design?
Yeah, maybe.
Justin, how about you? Any stock in these scores at all? Does this impact their value at all?
I don't think so. I think it's, you know, I think the biggest thing is they want to see how fast they can process information. But if they put in the time, and if they take a little bit longer than some other guys, they got to just put more time in the film room, got to spend more time there for the facilities to be able to get down these playbooks. They just got to be, you just got to make sure these guys are willing to put in that time if they score a little bit lower.
All right, it is time for our draft digest debate, our three and out. So first question, we're going to start with Justin here, and it's who would you rather have? Trent Williams, the athlete out of Oklahoma, or Brian, I say Bulaga, you say Bulaga. Which one are you going with, Justin?
I like Brian Bulaga from Iowa. To me, he's more of a natural. He's got better feet than Trent Williams when he put on the tape. And I think as far as Trent Williams, really can only be a right tackle, not a left tackle at the NFL level. That's just my opinion.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I'm just jumping in here. Doesn't the skill set of Trent Williams in terms of his athletic ability indicate that he can play left tackle?
Yeah, I think it does. I'm sorry, Justin. What did you want to say?
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Rev.
Yeah. I mean, Williams' skill set and his athleticism does indicate that he might develop into a left tackle down the road. But I don't think he is one right now. He's a little sloppy in his technique. He reaches for his defenders at times, which not causes him to go off balance. You know, to me, Brian Bulaga, if you draft him, he could be a left tackle from day one. He's got much better balance. He's much more of a finisher, and he's got a little bit of a mean streak to him. I'm definitely going to go with Bulaga here.
And I can't disagree with you guys. I like Balaga too. How about the short arms, Rev? Any concern there at all? Could that be something, you know, this has happened before with an Iowa product?
Yeah, well, his arms are not long, but they're not that short. They're about 33 inches. You don't want him any shorter than 33 inches, so I don't have a huge problem with his 33-inch arm length.
All right, question number two, and Ralph, you touched upon this a little bit earlier. Is Anthony Davis a top 10 pick? Why or why not?
I don't think he's a top 10 pick. I mean, based on his ability, based on his skill set, he is a top 10 pick. But what he's done so far shows me that he's not serious about being an NFL player. He showed up overweight at the combine. He didn't show up for his pro day, didn't work out. He doesn't like the weight room, doesn't like to work out. He's been a lazy and inconsistent guy. Why would I want to give this guy top 10 money? I'm sorry, he's not a top 10 pick in my book.
Justin, tell the Rev why.
He's a top 10 pick. Just put on the tape, and you'll see what he's with his feet, his athleticism, his strength. The biggest thing is, you know, I think we beat him up too much. I mean, we haven't heard from him as far as the Rutgers Pro Day. He will be working out, as far as what I've heard, he'll be working out later because he was sick and didn't feel well. They called him and said, hey, where you are? He just said, hey, I'm ill. So to me, I think that's a little bit blown out of proportion. Anthony Davis will be a top 10 pick when it's all said and done.
All right, Rev, I got to go with Justin here. I think he will be a top 10 pick, but I get your trepidation. I really do. I mean, this is something we wrote about, you know, as a concern for him even before this was, hey, he didn't always show the great consistency. You wonder, does he have the work ethic? And you do wonder, hey, what happens when he gets a big fat contract? You know, how does that impact him? Some players it does, some players it doesn't. So it's a legitimate concern you're bringing up, Rev, that's for sure. Justin, final question here. Who is your offensive line diamond in the rough?
Well, you know, I think there's I like, you know, Jared Bull here is from, you know, Hillsdale. To me, he's a guy who's really rising up the draft board. So I don't know if he's really a diamond in the rough anymore, but when we first saw him there in El Paso, not a lot of people were talking about him, and now he's a guy who's going to be a second or third round pick.
I'm going to go with a guy who's going to go late, probably maybe in the sixth or seventh round, maybe in the fifth round. I'm going to go with Sergio Render out of Virginia Tech. His stock has fallen in the past year, and he's had a poor week of practice at the East-West Shrine Game where he was vulnerable to the bull rush. He leaned on his opponent too much. However, this is a guy that has the skill set. He's got the strength. He's got the movement skills. He's got the athletic ability and the quickness to be a starting guard down the road. If the right team picks him and molds this guy and he works with the right coaches, I think this guy could develop into a decent player, but he has to improve his technique. But you know what? You're going to get this guy at a bargain. You're going to get him in the 5th or 6th round. So this is the type of player you want to invest in those low rounds.
Hey, Rev, interesting pick there. I mean, you went completely opposite there in terms of, you know, Valdir is a guy who, you know, people never even probably heard of until this draft process began, as you know, and whose stock is completely on the way up. Render is a kid who was, you know, freshman All-American, All-ACC as a sophomore, and was probably one of the biggest surprises in terms of not getting a combine invite, and his stock continues to slip. But you're saying, hey, grab that value low then.
Sure, absolutely, you know? Yeah. This is a guy you can mold.
All right, folks, thanks a lot for joining us here on this NFL Draft Bible Draft Digest. Don't forget to go to NFLDraftBible.com and go in there, get that book, get that all-access package. It's VIP 2010. Next week we're going to be talking about the defensive line. So obviously guys like Ndamukong Suh and Gerald McCoy will be coming up, as well as some of those pass-rushing defensive ends. We also have a lot of pro day news coming up, you know, more pro days this week. Tomorrow on Monday we have LSU, Wake Forest, and Georgia Tech, some notables. Tuesday is Georgia. The Bulldogs will get to show what they can do. On Wednesday, the Gators take the field. Joe Hayden, can he improve on his 40 time? Fresno State has some intriguing prospects, as does Penn State and Tennessee and Virginia Tech on Wednesday. So big, busy day Wednesday in terms of the pro days. Thursday, the Florida State Seminoles, Missouri, Virginia Tech. And on Friday, not as many big schools. We're looking at Minnesota and Northwestern State, as well as Tennessee Tech, Tulane, some small schools there. Maybe the receiver there, Williams, out of Tulane, can show us what he can do. Folks, thanks again for joining us. We hope you are with us next week as we break down the defensive linemen, inside, outside, defensive end, pass rushers, run pluggers, nose tackles, hybrids, all good stuff there with the defensive line. We took care of the trenches on offense this week, the trenches on defense next week. That is where the game is won and lost.